Hi everyone, welcome to the BPD Book Club. This is Sarah and I'm doing a intro to the intro right now. Talon and I were supposed to be reading through and talking about chapter 8, which is on safety planning. And I just want to kind of give a warning that this episode was really difficult for me. We did not hardly start the chapter, and we didn't finish it. And I don't have it in me to go back through and edit this. This one was a wash for me. And so I just want to prepare you for that. I think it's a really important listen through, particularly for people who don't have borderline. And if you do listen through all the way to the end, I apologize for all of the long pauses and silly phrases that might otherwise be edited out. And I'm super grateful for our listeners who let us show up messy. So enjoy.
Shit.
So just keep that in mind. You don't. I will not sit here with you and have you fucking clear your throat every 2 seconds. It drives me crazy.
I can't help it.
You have to talk louder than that.
Well,
you need to get closer and you need to talk louder.
Well, you're being mean to me.
I'm not. I'm just, we have done this so many times now and you still require prompting and it is so annoying.
I get into it eventually and I just won't talk at you.
Okay, great.
I will not look at you at all. Not even one time.
Okay, so hi everyone.
Sit like this for the entire podcast.
Hi everyone. Welcome to the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline BPD Book Club podcast mini series. And Talon and I are doing chapter 8 today, which is all about creating a safety plan. I'm actually really excited for this chapter. This is a super important topic.
Yeah, I don't really know what a safety plan is or how it works.
Okay.
Like, I feel like I know. I think I know.
So, like, remember that time where Tori's, or remember that time when my ex-wife's new wife was looking at my Instagram?
Yeah.
And I was very dysregulated.
Yes.
And I removed items from your room.
Is that safety planning?
That's an example of safety planning.
Okay. Yeah, that is really important.
It is.
Yeah.
You need to talk louder.
I am talking loud.
Okay. creating a safety plan. The opening quote says, yeah, make your arm bleed, bang your forehead on the headboard, harder, harder. Scream at those you love until they slink off terrified of you, the traitors. Burn your fingers on the stove. Prick your hand with a pin over and over and over and over. Take those pills. Buy more. Stock up. This might just be the big eclipse.
That's by Melissa Ford Thornton. Eclipses Behind the Borderline Personality Disorder. It's a book?
I don't care what it is. That's highly inappropriate.
Yeah, I don't really think that, like, labeling chapter 8 as creating a safety plan and then using that quote is appropriate or ethical, probably.
Not ethical at all. In fact, Lori and I have a hard rule that we don't talk about methods to harm on this podcast. And I would not have generally said any of those things, except for that we are doing a review of this book. And I think that that was an important quote to read to show the level of stigma that is associated with having BPD. Like, the quote could have very easily been someone reflecting on how developing a safety plan saved their life.
Right.
And it didn't.
Yeah.
So big miss right off the bat. Like, my, you can probably tell in my tone that I am defensive.
Yeah. Yeah, I can. I'm.
They do, however, go on to say, Rages, physical abuse, self-mutilation, suicide threats are the most isolating, frightening kinds of behaviors that non-borderline people must contend with from the borderline people in their lives. Oh my God. I thought they were going to say that borderline people experience.
No.
Also big miss.
Yeah, do you...
This fucking chapter already.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we're forgetting what book we're reading. It says sometimes non-BPs also rage, become abusive, or consider suicide. The keys to managing these difficult situations are planning and obtaining outside help. Hopefully your behavior will encourage the BP to get the professional assistance he or she desperately needs. What?
Anytime I've gotten support, it has been to avoid my own devastating life. And I mean, sometimes in combination with wanting my relationships to be more effective. But I think that people who have don't have borderline think that they have more power in the lives of borderline people than they really do.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like where this chapter seems to be going for me. It seems a little like...
I'm nervous we're going into a savior complex chapter.
Yes. Okay. Well, because remember, the book had hints of savior complex sprinkled throughout it. You know, it's like... And it's also like a little assuming. Like, assuming that... Assuming that, like, you, like, hopefully your behavior will encourage the borderline person to get the professional assistance he or she desperately needs. Like, assuming that our behavior has any great impact or effect on another person seeking treatment is a savior complex theory in itself.
Absolutely.
Like, it's just like, who the fuck are you, man?
Right.
Like,
obviously... I think it's important to say that, yes, partners, family members, friends, coworkers, whatever, can be beneficial in leading folks to treatment.
Sure.
But the book saying that it should be an inherent goal of yours to convince someone else to get treatment, that removes their personal, like, autonomy and decision making, right?
Yes.
And like their self-trust and their ability to have insight. Like, having borderline does not mean you don't have insight.
Right. Yeah, I've got a lot of, like, I don't know. I guess as somebody who is, like, you know, dating.
Keep going.
Dating somebody with borderline personality disorder. Again, this is like one of those times where I just don't identify with anything that this book is saying to me, because this book is geared towards me. I don't feel this way.
Have you felt this way at all in the last few weeks? It's been a hard few weeks. Like, I've been very symptomatic.
No.
Yeah.
I haven't.
But again, I'm 30 now.
Yeah.
I'm medicated to high hell. They really got me on that morning cocktail.
Yeah, but like, I still, like, yeah, you have been really symptomatic. And like, we talked about, I don't know if you want to talk about this, but like the other night, like, you said that you were like splitting on me.
Yeah.
And it was like the first time.
It was the first time.
That you've done that like in person.
Yeah.
And we like, we went rounds about it.
Yeah, it was tough.
It was really hard. And I mean, obviously, like, it was really hard, like, on my side, and it was really hard on your side. And
well, yeah, because I know I'm doing it.
Yeah,
I can't stop it.
Yeah.
It feels like I got to a stopping place, because I remember turning to you and saying, like, it's so fucking unfair that you're getting dysregulated and now I have to help you soothe, and I don't want to do that. And I was like, I am 60 seconds away from my parking spot, and the second that I park, I'm going to get in bed and read the news, and I'm going to re-regulate. Like, I literally said, I have 60 seconds. And yeah. In those 60 seconds, I could ruin my life.
Yeah.
Like, I just need quiet for the next 60 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I was, like, really dysregulated, and it was really hard because I was really confused and I wasn't really understanding what was happening, which makes sense because, like, you know, you were splitting. But at no point in time was I, like, frightened. I was just, right. I was very confused. I was very upset. I was, like, in full shutdown mode. I wasn't communicating very well. And I was really just, like, struggling to, like, even say anything.
Right.
Because I was just, like, none of this is making any sense to me. I don't understand. And then, you know, at one point I told you I was confused and I didn't understand what you wanted me to do. And then, like, that's kind of when you, I think, said the, like, I have 60 seconds. And then, like, you know, we parked and we talked it out and we got it figured out. And then, like, the next morning.
Well, and that was a really good example of me using the stop skill.
Yes. Yeah, it was. And
the next morning, the conflict resolution, the repair was literally so simple.
It was instantaneous.
I was like, you said, like, because I felt like you weren't advocating for me. And yeah. You were like, well, I don't know how. And I said, I need you to ask me.
Yeah.
And we both looked at each other and maybe laughed, maybe cried, yeah, hugged. Both,
probably.
And we were like, oh, my God, I feel better than I felt in days. Yeah. And you were like, I can just ask you. And I was like, yes, just ask me. And let's do it together.
Yeah.
Because you were trying to avoid dysregulation for me by not engaging with me.
Right.
And that left me feeling inherently rejected.
Right. Well, and I also, like, I was responding and reacting to my own thing, you know, where I didn't want you to feel like you had to solve or do those things for me.
Right.
But so, like, you were saying,
I said, this is not an independent thing.
Yeah, it's a partner thing.
And so I won't solve things for you, but this is not something that you can solve alone.
Right.
We need to tackle this particular issue together.
Yeah, and I've never had a partner where it was so collaborative. Like, it was like, it was literally like, you know, and like when, you know, when you see on the internet, it's not you versus me. It's me and you versus the problem. That's literally what that was.
Yeah, it was like, so simple.
That was literally the answer. It's you and me versus the problem we're having, and we can, like, collaborate on that problem.
Oh, my God. I can't. I can't wait until this particular moment in our life is over and we can podcast about it. Oh, I God, already I have ideas about the name of the episode.
I'm so tired.
I am so fucking tired. It is unreal.
Oh, yeah.
It is unreal what has been happening in our lives.
It's the worst episode of House Hunters on the planet.
Oh, my God.
It's bananas.
It is fucking bananas. Okay. So the book starts to talk about a lot of, like, the reasons that a person might safety plan. We're not going to, like, go into this because the book has already covered this. They talk about, quote, unquote, out of control rages.
I do like that, though.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to that. They
not the rage. I don't like the rage part. It's just like a little blurb on the side. Sorry, I forget. People can't see what we're reading.
That's okay. The blurb on the side says, when someone with BPD is highly emotionally aroused, do not expect them to act in a logical way.
So I don't love the way that's phrased, but I do really like.
Is it because the word arousal makes you feel a little tingly?
No. I'll tell you. I'll tell you. So it says,
it's not like a little like, a little like, oh.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. So the reason why I like it is because it like you said, when someone with BPD is highly emotionally aroused, I don't love that. Let's say that they're dysregulated, right?
Activated, yeah.
Activated, dysregulated, whatever your word of the day is.
Sure.
Do not expect them to act in a logical way. I don't like that either. Do not expect them to act in a logical way. No. Like, right, because like,
well, that's inherent to being dysregulated or right. Activated.
None of us are logical, right? But I think this is almost hitting a point.
That is good.
That is good. You and I come across this often. And you say to me, you are responding to me logically, and I am coming to you emotionally. Like,
I have very literally said, you're trying to logic out of this, and I can only ride this out. And once I've ridden it out, I'll get back to you on logic.
Exactly. So like that, I think, is a really useful tidbit, tip, piece of information, and has been really helpful to me as somebody who does try to logic my way out of feelings, either my own or someone else's, because they are hard sometimes.
And they feel unsafe to people. I do actually think I'm glad that you like brought our interest to this because I think probably the, and I forgot about this because you and I don't really fight and don't really have a lot of conflict. But I think probably, especially for like people who are undiagnosed or don't realize they have borderline, or partners who like think maybe people have borderline but they're not sure. I think like the birthplace of so much fighting is people trying to show the quote unquote logical side of something that's upsetting or activating or dysregulating or arousing to the borderline person. It's you quite literally cannot, right? We talk a lot in DBT about your units of distress being so high. And once they're 60 and above, you biologically cannot receive and process information. So your attempt to make me understand myself with logic is, first of all, I can't hear it. And not being able to hear it, and it makes me mad because it induces shame that I have been feeling my whole life, which is why am I like this and other people are not? I must be stupid. And there starts huge blow-ups, right? Because like I understand from the person who's coming at something logically, like I understand their perspective of being like, wait a minute, this doesn't track. Like, let me just help them see what they're missing. No, sir, I'm not missing that piece. I just don't give a flying fuck because the feelings that you have on the day your cat died, who was your like lifelong companion, is the feeling I'm having right now because I can't find the coffee creamer that I want. We are not the same. You know those memes? We are not the same.
Well, and it's like you can't, like, the coffee creamer is a great analogy. It's like, logically, oh, baby, we'll just go to another store.
But they don't sell it. I don't have the energy. You can't imagine how much effort it takes me to get out of this house, into the car, to the Safeway. Do I have my ID? Do I have my debit card? Do I have to transfer money into my account? Is some motherfucking person gonna park in the spot that I want? Like, going into the outside world is so much effort when you have BPD because it is so many unregulated, unpredictable, uncertain things that could come up. Like, no, I just want the fucking coffee creamer right now. I don't want my coffee in 10 minutes. I want it now. Right. Like, I'm like getting angry
I know.
because there was only one
I'm glad that you brought it
store
up.
in the entire fucking country, and I have driven the West Coast from top to bottom in my fucking Sprinter van that sold pumpkin spice chobani creamer, and I never found it again. Like, how are they going to do me dirty like that? Give me the greatest creamer in the entire world and then never sell it anywhere else?
I don't know. I don't know. I feel the same way about the like brulee brown sugar or whatever it's called by Chobani. But
Anyways,
but that was
but that was a good
that's
that I'm glad we narrowed in on that.
Me too, because I think it's like that comes up for us often.
And the book does go in to talk about how rage and logic don't mix, and I think that is good. So Okay, this is where the safety planning stuff starts to come in. So they talk about what to do during a rage. Here are some ways to kind of navigate this. So they say non-borderline people can say calmly, I will not discuss this further with you if you continue to yell and scream at me, right? I'm willing to be supportive if you can calmly tell me what it is you want or need. I think that's great. Firm boundary and also validating that, like, I'm here to support you and love you. If the raging can oh my God, this fucking chapter is about the non-borderline safety planning.
Yeah, baby.
This isn't about helping me safety plan?
No. You didn't read ahead. You didn't skip ahead. Do we need to take a minute?
The fucking audacity of these authors to write in this book safety planning about themselves.
Do we need to take a minute?
Oh my God. Oh, I'm so fucking annoyed. I don't know. I don't want to continue.
No.
No, I don't want to continue.
Do you want me to? It's rough.
That you might as well have called this fucking chapter developing a domestic violence safety plan.
Yes. Yeah, I think I hear you that you're feeling very done and probably very, like, attacked and vulnerable right now.
Well, because it would have been appropriate for them to talk about how to help your individual safety plan because they are at a profound risk of dying by suicide, profound risk of hurting themselves. And the vast majority of our borderline folks don't want to hurt other people.
Yeah, I mean,
so if we can help them safety plan, if we can help them regulate, the likelihood that they will hurt someone else is very small.
Yeah. And that's not what this is about. Yeah, because it says here,
why is it never fucking about me? I swear to God, the amount of effort that I have to put in to everybody else around me who doesn't want to go to therapy, doesn't want to get sober, don't want to take fucking meds, but guess what? I have to go to therapy. I have to go to the hospital. I have to get sober. I have to develop 7 fucking safety plans on my own.
That's rhetorical, right? Because I don't know.
Do you know how many times I ask other people, how are you? Are you okay? What do you need? How can I support you?
All the time.
And people don't ask me how I am because they don't want to know. Because the reality of how I am as a borderline person is too overwhelming to them. So yeah, let's talk about how to keep you fucking Joe Schmo safe. How did I not understand that this was safety planning for the non-borderline person?
Because of all the hope that you hold.
All of the hope.
And because you were reading the first sentence of this little blurb, and as you were reading, I just skipped ahead because I do that. Because I was reading over your shoulder. Do we want to maybe, like...
The last part of it in their fucking list is refuse to read the borderline person's letters or email. Disconnect your phone.
Take a taxi home, put on some headphones, and listen to music.
I'm done with this chapter. So, I'm not reading this chapter.
Okay.
I am going to use a few minutes to say... A couple things. One, it is important that everyone stays safe. I am not disregarding the fact that there is potential for harm to both the borderline person and the non-borderline person. But what this book is failing to say is there is potential for harm from both people. And I'm just going to scroll for a moment to see if they do, in fact, talk about safety planning for the borderline person. So
Well, it
let's
said like
see.
what not to do. It says,
That what not to do is
oh,
not what? Male.
no, it was before that, but maybe you just don't scroll back.
So we're scrolling. Set personal limits around self-harm. Okay. Suicide threats. Got it. Got it. Got it. Got it. Okay. So the chapter ended with police intervention. Nowhere does it talk about safety planning for the individual with borderline. So I think what's best is we not read things that are going to cause any more harm to our listeners and ourselves.
Yeah, I don't think that this chapter, if anybody is reading along with us, I do not think that this chapter is a safe chapter for anybody with borderline personality disorder to be reading. Maybe you're able to read it, but I don't think that I'd read it alone. This, I think, would be really, really. I can only imagine. I don't know, but I mean, I actually I don't need to imagine because I'm watching it happen right in front of me. But I wish you guys could see Sarah's face right now.
I'm just so tired of having to do the work alone.
It's just, yeah,
I've never had a single family member ask me, what's on my safety plan? Do I have one?
yeah, I don't, yeah, this chapter is not helpful. It's not, it's just,
Non-borderline people deserve to stay safe.
yeah.
And if this chapter is helpful for the non-borderline person to read, to have ideas about how to stay safe, I validate that that's an important thing for that person to do. I will say that this chapter is perpetuating a lot of harm by inherently not acknowledging that the safety plan has to be created in addition to the safety plan for the non-borderline person to the borderline person. And chapter eight is only about creating a safety plan for the non-borderline person, which is inherently saying that they matter more than we do. And I understand that this book is written for them, but they don't understand the role that they play in the borderline person's life.
Right.
So if you want to be in the borderline person's life, then you can't ignore the safety planning that needs to be done. And
No.
then it goes into chapter nine, protecting children from BPD behavior. So it doesn't even follow up with a safety planning for the person with borderline. I haven't felt this yet in this entire book club mini series, but I want to apologize to our readers for any or our listeners for any damage we have unintentionally done. We have never promoted this book, right? We have been
Right.
very clear about this mini series is not a promotion of this book,
No, not at all.
but the unintentional damage of reading it because
Not well.
I am feeling very damaged by this myself, and I can't ignore the impact of listening for the people who listen and the people who love Lori and I. It weighs like so heavy on my heart that we have so many people that listen to this podcast who are very vulnerable and at risk. And I think about that constantly. And like, this podcast is only ever for good. It's only ever for building community. And it is like an important part of the advocacy and the moving the conversation forward that we do something like read this text and talk about how dangerous it is, because I know that we have partners listening to this mini series. But also, if there's like been unintentional harm done to our community members just by having us read through this, I apologize. In the show notes, we will include links to safety planning. Mm-hmm. And a safety plan can be used by anybody, borderline or not. So if the non-borderline person listening who feels like they need a safety plan because of potential interpersonal issues in their relationship, that safety plan can be used for a variety of issues, variety of needs, a variety of people. It's not, safety planning doesn't need to be specific to one disorder, one culture, one
situation,
person.
Yeah.
I love you.
I love you too.
Do you have any last minute thoughts? This was not the episode we were expecting.
No, it wasn't. And like, I don't know, I wish like I had something to say. But I guess like I can only speak from my own personal experience in watching you enact your safety plan multiple times throughout our relationship, and I didn't know that that's what that was.
Yeah, I mean, I think like particularly for me as someone who has a very, very small community, mm-hmm. and who has a small family network at this point, of people who very much love me, but also have very busy, full lives, and don't understand me. I have learned, and also in my own self-isolating, my own self-shaming, I perpetuated this learning that we have to hide those behaviors. So like, right. I don't always talk about the things that I'm doing in an effort to keep myself more safe.
Right. You don't. And I think that, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, like, talking about these things is important, right? Like, we need to be open and talk about them to, like, try and minimize and try and reduce shame that anybody feels, right? And, like, to allow your partners that little bit of access to, like, your inner world, right? Like, I don't have a safety plan when it comes to you and I getting into a conflict like the book.
Well, we don't need one.
Said. Right.
I mean, that, and that's like, we don't need one.
Right,
we don't. And most people in relationships, probably with borderline people, probably don't need a safety plan. Right. Let's just be real. Have I been emotionally abusive? Yes. Have I done things that made people feel perhaps unsafe?
Yeah.
In my life?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can count on my hand, though, the number of times that has happened.
Yeah.
I have never perpetuated any significant violence to someone outside of driving drunk.
Right.
Right? That, when I'm using drugs and alcohol, there should be a safety plan for that. There never was. But like the likelihood of me putting someone else's life at serious risk is very low. The likelihood of me putting my own life at serious risk
Very high.
is very high.
Yeah, and the
And
chap
why are we not saying that?
one, and that's the thing, is the chapter I skimmed. We skimmed. It's a little hard even for me to stomach, but they talk a little bit about suicide attempts and things like that. And a couple of their sentences were flippant about borderline people's suicide attempts, as if they're manipulative or if they're just for attention. So I just want to let you guys know that. Just in case you do decide to read it, it's not just about, how to get away from, how to safety plan away from somebody with BPD. They're also kind of talking about, from what I skimmed, they're speaking about attempts and ideation as tactlessly and as carelessly as they started the beginning of the chapter. So, yeah, I'm a little bit at a loss. I didn't really think that the chapter was going to be like that. And I guess like one point that I want to hit home is you said something to me like when we first started dating, really when we were first getting to know each other, and you like had told me about like you having BPD, which was like a huge deal that you told me. And, you said something that really hit home. And I'm trying to remember the way you phrased it, but you said essentially, and you've said it before, like no one will ever feel the way I feel inside about myself, right? Like that's basically like what you said, like no one will ever understand how intensely I feel about something all the time.
Right.
And like that is something that I say to myself when you and I are in conflict, or when you are dysregulated and I'm and you've told me to stop logicking, The next thing I say to myself in my head is like, I don't understand how she feels because it's too big to comprehend.
Yeah.
And knowing that, right, if we're just going to compare you and I, apples and oranges, I don't need a safety plan because I don't feel so big that it's uncomprehensible. You need a safety plan because you feel so big that it's incomprehensible. The book fundamentally ignores and misunderstands the crux of your disorder. And it almost feels intentional because they've said, they've kind of, were, jerking themselves off about how much research they did. But they missed the point. That's all I think I have to say is this chapter was a big miss, and they missed the fucking point. And it's harmful. And it hurts a community that's at a really high risk. And I don't know. I don't know what to do with that. It almost is just like, did you take a step back when you guys were editing this book? The writers, the editors, this went through multiple channels.
Can we be done now?
Yeah.
I know that you need to process this and I want to process it with you, but I literally like don't feel like I'm in my body and I need to pause.
Yeah, let's pause. I'm sorry. I was
No,
going up on
you don't need to
my
apologize.
soapbox.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's pause.
I love you.
I love you too.
Hi, friends. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. Lori and I are so grateful that you're here with us on this journey, and we can't wait to dive into more topics in the future with you all about borderline, and even have some more fun and exciting guests to join us on the podcast. If you really enjoyed this episode, we would love if you would rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. We would also love to see you interact with us on social media and on our Patreon page. The links to that are included in the show notes, so check us out there. We would be incredibly honored to get to know you all as you get to know us and our recovery stories. We love you, and we'll see you next time.